Hello and welcome to the Decibel Boost Podcast monthly album roundup for the month of June 2023. I'm your host, Robert, and you know what I like about Gex? Consistency. And with me, I have...
Well, to quote one Al Bundy, "Strike!" Get the bread, folks. Get the bread!
And...
How the hell did I get here? Like a kefir on me.
Well, you see, Mark, there's a highly rational explanation for this. See, you woke up too early. You weren't supposed to know this. Now we have to give you the Men in Black treatment.
What?
Sorry, you know too much.
Fuck, where am I again?
You're in the call with us right now. You're recording our music podcast.
Okay. This week, we didn't even have no shit this week. Yeah, in case you didn't get this memo, we didn't do a normal episode this week.
It's been slow. The music industry sucks right now.
Yeah, like, man, why can't the music industry just consistently have something to talk about? You know, be like Gex. Have that consistency. Also, how great is it that in the year of our Lord 2023, Gex is coming back?
It's amazing.
Gex, Tomba, Clock Tower, fucking Plumbers Don't Wear Ties. Complete with a James Rolfe interview. I am genuinely tempted at this point. And I'm like, you know, maybe I shouldn't. But then again, I'm sitting here looking at my cart on Write Stuff, and I'm unironically considering adding a manga in which the main protagonist ejaculates diamonds.
I would advise against that. It's very painful, like my voice sounds right now.
Okay, that sounds painful. Like
11 volumes. Look, I would tell myself to have self-control, but you do realize I have a volume of Dick Fight Island on my manga shelf, right? I clearly do not know when to stop. But anyway, enough of that business, because this ain't like a porno manga podcast, this is a music podcast. And as for, you know, now we're crossing over into the second half of the year, we're already midway through, and, you know, there was, again, I feel like I keep saying this, because the consistency of the year is just so up and down so far. Like, it feels like when there's stuff, there really is stuff, but when there's isn't stuff, it's just kind of, like, what are we even doing here? But to be fair, June did have some stuff of note, so let's not delay any further, and let's talk about, first off, what actually did come out this past month. So we start with the first weekend, June 2nd, 2023. Your new releases included the new Proto-Martyr album, Formal Growth in the Desert. Unfortunately, Buck Cherry's newest album, Volume 10. The sophomore album from metalcore band Pupil Slicer with Blossom. Unfortunately, the new Avenged Sevenfold album, Life is But a Dream. Maybe we might be playing our cards here early, but fortunately, at least, there was also the newest album from the band Foo Fighters, But Here We Are. Now, moving on to June 9th, 2023, your new albums include the latest project from industrial metal pioneers Godflesh with Purge, the new self-titled EP from the band Glass Casket, the newest EP from Slipknot with Adderall, from the band Extreme, their new album Six, from Scar Symmetry, there was the Singularity Phase 2 Xenotaph, which sounds like something that would be developed by CyberConnect 2. There was a collaborative project from Boldy James and Chan Hayes with Prisoner of Circumstance. From Christine and the Queens, we had the new album Paranoia Angels True Love. And of course, from Janelle Monae, we had their newest album, The Age of Pleasure. Now moving on to June 16th, 2023, your new albums included the likes of the latest project from King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard, Petrodragonic Apocalypse or Dawn of Eternal Night and Annihilation of Planet Earth and the Beginning of Merciless Damnation. Anyway, there was also the new collaborative album between Boris and Uniform with Bright New Disease. We had Sigur Rós delivering their first new album in 10 years on rather short notice with Atta. Atta? Not sure how you pronounce that. from the band Queens of the Stone Age, we had their first new album in 6 years with In Time's New Roman. Unfortunately from Gunna, A Gift and a Curse. Sure. From rapper Kool Keith, we had Black Elvis 2. And the first new solo album from Killer Mike in over a decade with Michael. Moving on to the week after that, we had on June 23rd, 2023, the newest album from avant-garde rock band Swans with the Beggar. From Portugal, The Man, we had Chris Black Changed My Life. From Koi LeRae, we had her new project Koi. From West Side Gun, we had And Then You Pray For Me, which I believe is some kind of successor to Pray For Paris. Don't quote me on that. We had the newest album from Young Thug with Business Is Business. From Kim Petras, we had her new album Feed the Beast. And we had the big comeback of a bounce icon Big Freedia with Central City. And last, on June 30th, 2023, well, on the upside, there was a new EP from The Alchemist with Flying High. There was also the new Lil Uzi Vert album Pink Tape. From Kesha, we had a live acoustic EP called Gag Order Live Acoustic EP from Space. And last, and certainly least, we had the Volume 1 soundtrack to the newest smash hit HBO series, The Idol. Oh, man. Fucking 6 episodes only.
5.
Oh, five. Oh, wow. It's even worse than I thought. Holy shit. God damn. Wow. Yeah. Good luck finding something to fill the schedule. Especially with that whole strike thing going on. I'm sure it'll be fine. Everything's fine. But, yeah, that basically about does it for the new releases from June. So, as always, we're going to kick it over to everyone to get the ball rolling. Starting with Alex to let us know what exactly he was listening to.
Well, I'm going to have to change some things up here because if you can't tell by the sound of my voice, I'm very hoarse. A combination of a couple days of my voice just giving out on me and bad acid reflux from the night before.
Oh.
So I'm not going to be in a very talkative mood. And unfortunately, but fortunately in a way, I didn't have a lot to say about a lot of stuff that came out. These guys will do the heavy lifting on that end because there wasn't a whole lot that came out in June. But I'm going to suffer through the pain in my throat to give a roasting of sorts as a follow-up to last month's. You might recall I talked about that Sleep Token album and left you all on a cliffhanger. I'm making good on that with this. Avenged Sevenfold, Life is But a Dream.
Yeah, there was discourse. Quite a bit, in fact.
Yeah, so I wrote out everything I'm going to say here. I have 1,300 words prepared. Pray for my throat. It's not going to... It's hanging on by a thread. Okay. First, a prelude. Back in 1998, after dissolving the band Death after the release of their landmark album Symbolic, Chuck Schuldiner decided to reform the group for one more album with more progressive metal influences than before, the album being The Sound of Perseverance, which, while its reception isn't as high as albums like Symbolic or Human, it has some great moments to it all across its runtime with more of those prog elements put in. And yes, Voice of the Soul is great. I will not hear any debate about it.
Preach, brother.
Yeah. And 25 years later, we have another attempt at avant-garde prog metal in the form of this album. Oh boy. Okay. I didn't want to give it a listen because the singles just didn't impress me. But it just kept clawing at me as if it were challenging me to dive in and give it a listen to witness everything it had going for it. Only that turned into an endurance of some of the most half-baked, quote-unquote, prog music I've heard in quite a long time. And while I don't normally do track-by-track dives anymore because that takes way too much time for me, time that I don't have, I'm making an executive exception here to take on this challenge firsthand and never deal with it ever again.
Yeah, like, look, we've heard plenty of bad albums doing these roundups, but every now and then, you get a record that needs to be dissected like an autopsy.
Yeah, so, how did we get here? A 6.5 year wait from their last album, the second in a series of albums with directionless direction, beginning with 2013's Tales of the King, which can be summed up as We Have Metallica's Black Album at Home. And continuing with 2016's The Stage, which I will describe as shitty Dream Theater emulation, because nobody was asking for a 16-minute closing track with professional buzzkill Neil deGrasse Tyson on it.
Oh, yeah,
here we are.
I feel like I should be happy I forgot that I listened to that album.
Most people did. After all this time waiting, after various delays and record label shenanigans and vocal surgery and bouts of experimental drug use, we have Life is But a Dream. Oh, don't forget all the NFT shilling, too.
Of course.
Yeah, I shall start with the positives of this album and say, for all of its faults, it's 20 minutes shorter than The Stage, and the instrumental performances are very solid, especially for Brooks Wackerman on the drums. That is the end of my positives on this album. Because what the fuck is any of this?
Oh, God.
So we begin. The opening track, Game Over, starts with this classical guitar passage that sounds like it's ripped off from 70s Rush, Led Zeppelin, Greta Van Fleet. And immediately after, we get M. Shadows singing, kind of. Like, there are some fast verses that sound very badly copy and pasted together. Like, there's no overlap. It's just, let me explain it like this. I'm saying this, now this, now this, now this. It's like that.
Yeah, it's like if I took that, tried to copy it into a bunch of, like, individual tracks, then just awkwardly layer them all over together. It's like, what the fuck?
Yeah, and that's before we get the bad Folgers coffee jingle interpolation in the lyrics and more of the theatrical elements from The Stage coming back in. How fun.
You know, at least Chance the Rapper's The Big Day was able to make it two tracks in before hitting you with the cringe. This just smacks you in the face from the word go.
Yeah. Yeah, the best part of waking up, something I'm fucked up. I can't remember what the lyrics were. Yeah, track two, Mattel. It's a song about goddamn toy dolls being melted in the sun like Sid does in Toy Story. It just goes back and forth between heavy guitar riffs, Fender Rhodes piano lines, and very, very out of place synth leads. Not to mention how strained Matt's voice sounds and how dry the production sounds when it's not being washed out with filters and flangers and all other types of post-processing. And we can thank Joe Baresti for that, the same guy who produced The Stage and Slipknot's The End so far.
Mm-hmm, I see.
I don't like my album sounding dry. I like them sounding lush. The track Nobody, the song is boring, too much synth work, post-processing tool, we talked about it already. We love you. Nobody asked for Mr. Bungle's California at Home, guys.
God, yeah, you want to talk about, like, really shitty production, like, this one, I think, is, like, the nexus of all the shitty problems of this album in one song. Because, first, as we've already said, Shadows can't fucking sing anymore. He clearly can't.
No.
And this song is throwing every production effect at the wall to try and mask it, but it fails.
Oh, there's more to come.
He sounds like he's getting kicked in the nuts while trying to record this shit. Like, fucking Denji from Chainsaw Man is right there giving him the fucking...
God. Yeah, it's not great. When Mike Patton does weird esoteric shit, you know it's going to be quality because it's Mike Patton and, you know, he's able to pull that off, whether it be in Faith No More or Mr. Bungle. But Jesus H. Christ above, this track bites. And it's here where I'm looking back on Fantano's not good review of it and Crash Thompson's little sweetie review of it with plenty of folks in the comments saying, well, I like it because it's different and it sounds unique. And just keep that in the back of your mind later. I will come back around to that.
Yeah, just... Even the instrumental sounds like it's super... Like, the vocals themselves already sound like they're being stitched together from a bunch of random takes to get something vaguely usable. Even the instrumental here has, like, this really awkward, like, stop-start momentum. Like, they're just trying to get something functional out of 47 different takes.
There will be more to come. Like in, well, not this next track, but, I'll talk about it anyway. Cosmic. This is considered to be the quote-unquote best song on the album, and yeah, I don't see it. This just sounds like bad lounge music with bad mixing in the second half. And then a goddamn vocoder gets introduced.
Oh, God.
In 2023. On a metal album, supposedly. Like, you know, they're... 2007 self-titled album had some wild things to it, like auto-tune on Loss and sub-bass on Almost Easy and some wild Danny Elfman influence on A Little Piece of Heaven and country bits on Gunslinger and Dear God. But here's the difference here. Those are good songs on a good album with coherent, identifiable qualities to them. This is just a grab bag of ass.
Yeah,
not in a fun way either.
Yeah, this. I feel like the one conclusion I want to say here. I'm gonna wait till we get closer to the end of this. So go on.
Mm-hmm. All right, Beautiful Morning. Well, it's something like the Machine Head song. It starts off kind of heavy until there's a dream pop ass bridge showing up to fit the prog prerequisites that this is for a goddamn Procol Harum song. But it's just so unnecessary. It's completely disconnected from the rest of the track structure. It's like it was just taken from another track in production, just cut in the project file, and just pasted right in. It doesn't work. Easier. Oh, good. More vocoder nonsense to start as a fake out before the heavy guitars come in. And then it just goes back and forth with those two ideas. So it's just another track with no real flow to it. I'm a production guy. This irritates the fuck out of me. And now for the God Trilogy.
Oh.
Yeah. You thought the stage was up its own ass? This is going up, out the other end, through the neck, inside the ass. Don't question it. Gee. This song just starts off with full-on Dream Theater plagiarism before going into what I can only describe as show tune metal, if it were off Broadway, under a bridge in New Jersey. I'll just echo what Crash said. Just because you had Mike Portnoy in your band for a while doesn't give you the right to rip off images and words.
I was gonna say the same thing too. Just
God, ordinary. There are more synth parts with a four on the floor drum groove, like it's the goddamn 70s.
Yeah, this is
auto-tune.
Yeah, I think it was Fantana who said this was some fucking, like, straight-up Daft Punk random access memories type bullshit.
God, yeah. And with auto-tune and more vocoder, goody, it's back. And it leads to a synth solo that would make Kevin Moore, Derek Sheridan, and Jordan Rudess wince in shame. I have played better synth solos in Guitar Center than what's on this album.
Christ.
I'm just saying, I can play the Lines in the Sand intro. It's better than anything on this goddamn album.
And how.
Yeah, and then we have Death. This is just some lounge-ass Tony Orlando shit that would get you brewed out of Branson.
Fuck.
And then the closing title track, Life is But a Dream, it's just a 4-minute piano instrumental. That's all it is.
Yeah, and, you know, just to go back to the pin that I was mentioning earlier, when it got to this point, when it ended on a solo piano ballad, I think I understood what everyone was saying, because at one of the big points around, like, the discourse of this album, especially in regards to all the negative reception, when you listen to this, you get the sense that no one in the band actually wanted to fucking make this album, which is why it sounds like fragmented bullshit. Because, like, it's just so many random-ass ideas and sections and parts just kind of callously thrown together with no care for, like, actual songwriting craft. And, like, the second the piano comes on, you can practically imagine everyone else in the band being like, I can't do this anymore. Fuck it. We're leaving. I'm gonna go to the fucking bar or something. Fuck, I even think, like, I think it was either Game Over or Mattel, which has a lyric that says, I don't belong here anymore. Gee, you fucking think?
Now, here's the thing. I don't like going down the well of, this is different, therefore it's bad, because that's just a terrible fallacy to fall back on. I enjoy Linkin Park's A Thousand Suns, in spite of its abstract concept and electronica infusion. I enjoy 90s-era Metallica, even though it's nowhere close to the same ballpark of their 80s peak. And back to my opening statement, I really like Death's The Sound of Perseverance for its more progressive elements. But the one thing that ties all of these examples together is that I can identify the bands making these albums. I know it's Linkin Park. I know it's Metallica. I know it's Death. This album is virtually indistinguishable from any Avenged Sevenfold album I've ever heard. And I'm having a really hard time believing some folks when they say that this album is enjoyable to them because it's different and unique. Honey, I'm gonna need a bit more homework and some work cited before I believe you, because I listened to all of this from end to end. I can't tell you a single thing I like about it. The lyrics are barely coherent, the production is as dry as it gets, the synth and orchestral elements are completely out of place, the guitars barely get any prominence throughout the entire album, and it all adds up to a package that's coasting on brand recognition to get people to ooh and ah over it. And that's not good enough for me. Keep in mind, this is coming from someone who's deep into prog music, someone who's into weird stuff from Dream Theater, Stephen Wilson, Opeth, Devin Townsend, and so on. And even I can't get into this weird prog worship garb. Like, full credit to the band for going as far of an extreme as they did, but this needed a lot more time in the oven. This isn't even half-baked or even quarter-baked. It's been sitting in the oven for 6 years on broil.
How?
Gordon Ramsay would smack you in the head for this.
Yeah, here's how I see it. Like, at a certain point, you think ambition would give way to some level of competence. Because, like, ambition means nothing if you don't have, like, the technical know-how to put this shit together. Like, you could say that, oh, it's really different, or oh, it's unique and ambitious. To put this in weeb-ass anime terms, you know what else is different and ambitious? The output of the anime studio Gohans. But just because you can put all kinds of fancy camera angles and weird fisheye lens distortion doesn't mean you should do that for a fucking middle school romantic comedy anime.
Just because you can doesn't mean you should. And to borrow from Crash and Fantano again, this album to me feels like a very perverse love child of Motley Crue's Generation Swine, Mr. Bungle's California, and Bad Religion's Into the Unknown.
Ah, yeah, that was a thing.
That's something you never want to do. If this is someone's first experience with prog music, you're going to be given a very, very bad first impression. Skip this. Go listen to Seeds from My Memory, Blackwater Park, and Absentia instead, because this album fucking sucks.
It was so bad that Fantano couldn't even do his review intro normally. He just had to stand there with a 1,000-yard stare until the explosion went off. Like, what the hell is this? Kind of says it all right
this,
there.
This will not be revered in a year's time. People are going to look back on this album and go, yeah, this wasn't very good, was it? Again, if any of you out there like it, I'm happy for you. I'm just going to need a little bit more than, well, I like it because it's different. Give me some examples. Do what Fantano tried to do with El Los Pollos Hermanos, whatever his name is. Hum me the fucking melody. Okay, my voice is tired. I'm going to go lie down.
All right. The roast game is finished. Now we can proceed with the rest of the podcast as, well, I would say normal, but are any of us really all that normal? Anyway, time to throw it over to Mark and let him spiel about some albums that are hopefully a lot better than Avenged Sevenfold. I don't think anything can get that bad at this point.
Yeah. Turns out, at first, if I had 10 albums to talk about, turns out 11. I have 11 albums. Yeah. And being that June was Pride Month, and, well, the way it ended, I'm so sorry. I'm gonna start up with two very queer artists. The first being Janelle Monae, Age of Pleasure. So, how to describe this album? You see, it's pretty much all like that Creed song, because this album is about. It's about sex.
Sex!
Tell me more about this sex.
Yes. So this is very, well, a very tastefully, but still holding on main album that's written through the lens of the queer and black experience, which he said in a review, they said the album is specific to the pan-African crowd who are my friends. I won't be allowed to dysphoria. If they fuck with me, I'm good. I'm great. Which, the sounds of it is, you know, very laid back when you got, you know, word genres like Afrobeat, reggae, soul. Very different from, well, different from, you know, Dirty Computer and the other sci-fi late albums that they produced, that they made way back. Like, even if that's him, most of their Wonderland crew, you know, people like Nate Wonder, Roman J. and Arthur, and some, and of course, you got some mentioned, you know, Stone Kati and Each of 80, which they appear on the track Float, which was a single. And of course, this is off a track felt like Champagne Shit, which got this megadosis Ethiopian electric piano and synth going on, which, alright, that sounds kind of nice, which going to live the luxurious shit, where, you know, take vacations, popping that bubbly, which, you know, Champagne Shit. Phenomenal has getting the verse in a month and really in a more monotonic way, and it's like, and basically me and my friends are all sexy but fine. Phenomenal, basically. We got features from rapper singer Dolce on there, which, okay. Another track is called Hot. That's spelled HAUTE, like hot, like that.
I get it.
Yeah, and of course y'all know the song Lipstick Lover, which is basically for the sapphics, which, well, no shit. I mean, lipstick about having a good time with a woman or famous in a person with a very nice work video that I would have put on the review sub, but I'm not trying to get a strike or try to get the site a strike or have Rob at me or did again. I don't know if you don't mind. I don't know. He's right there.
I mean, you're already napping in my car, apparently.
Yeah, true. Then we got a song, The Rush, which has a spoken word from Neil Long of all, people. Yeah, Neil Long. You know that actress you know for every black movie in the 90s? You remember Friday?
I remember.
Yeah. I got a verse from another rapper singer, Amore, which I'll mention later on, because I got it on. And I will say there are some interludes here that, yeah, this album is, I will say to both its disadvantage and advantage that the album is, you know, it's like 30-something minutes or 31 minutes, I believe. Sometimes, like, it's short and tight, but sometimes you feel like some songs could have been, some interludes could have been longer. Like, you got features from Grace Jones, but it's more interlude, or like Ooh La La, which is basically basically an interlude, like, just a interlude. And it's like the French 75 with Sister Nancy, which, okay, I mean, I feel a bit disappointed because I want to hear a longer track, and some shorter tracks do feel like extend an outro to the previous song, like Black Sugar Beach, that felt like a, instead of outro, the champagne shit, to be honest. But, I mean, I'm cool with it. I'm cool with the album as a whole. Like, I know some people, like, I mean, I know they want the albums, like, you know, like The Electric Lady, because they got that since then, and 30 Computer might be close to that, but it's not tuned in that, but it's also an album, which I enjoy from front to back, alright, yeah, it's worth a listen if, you know, if it's great at, it'll be great at parties if you want to entertain some people. But yeah, I say, it's been a pleasure. Alright, next up, from the other queer artist that I'm going to talk about, Christine and the Queens with Paranoia, Angels, True Love. Now, this one, I have to brace myself for, because this album was 97 minutes. It's been three parts, 20 tracks overall. It's basically like the continuation of his previous album, Red Car. It's in French. I don't make me say it in French. I'm gonna call it Red Car because if I try to pronounce French, y'all will kill me. And all four of you, I don't know. But yeah, I see this one. I'm like, it does, saw the intro, it says, it was inspired by the play from Tony Kushner, Angel in America. Basically, what the album is going to be about, basically that, well, you hear the theme, of paranoia, angels, what the album says at all. Like, you get this intro with an overture that sounds like an opera, which, of course, at least the single Tears can be so soft, he has tears centering. He talked about how, his mother passed away in recent years. This is about his brother and friends, and, we got to cry some tears. I like the fact the song sounds like some nice trip hop shit, which reminds me of earlier Massive Attack. Also, it sampled Marvin Gaye, Feel My Love All Inside, which, okay. It says mention the name Marvin. There's a track called Marvin Descending, which is a one verse track from him. And it's either an angel, someone named Marvin, or a vision of the person in mind. Like, I like the outro I was going along with this drum production, which I'm kind of feeling. All right. Which, of course, it's all about A Day in the Water, which, again, this has some very noticeable trip hop, some very, electronic trip hop influence. I mean, low key. Full Life is interesting because he sings through the key and sample of Johann Patrick Bell's Canon in D. You know, that.
Don't get me started on that fucking song. Okay. I played the cello in school. We hate that song. It's just the same goddamn quarter notes for 5 minutes.
Okay, damn.
This has been Classical Music Opinions with Alex.
Yeah, it's also the basis of every pop song ever written.
Oh, yeah, I remember that video.
Okay, that's right. I forgot about that. I guess I can better hear because it sounds, well, I don't know. not as basic, or I don't know, the meat is not as basic, but I don't know. I kind of like it. Also in the album, I was saying, like, you get some pierces from Madonna here and there. Although I will say she's doing more spoken word rather than singing, which that's fine by me. I'm fine with that. I will find a tricky part is a track called Track 10, which is on Track 7, and it's 11 minutes long, which that's like the end of the first party album, which not only the Angels, but you got another track called Overture. This is not featuring a feature from co-producer album Mike Dean, who's really been on fire lately a lot, whether producing for this album, being a part of the music for the idol as well, which you got him singing this very trying to sort of the voice with voice. He's been shining forever, your son, which is a good vocal performance from Chris. Like, I almost forward the like I like to hear. Is this sounds wrong with everything? The drums were a bit simple, but I kind of like it. And then got the playlist check of Flowery Days, which got the sweet going for it, and it's very simple, elegant. I Met an Angel, all has been done returning. I'm turning doing for like an interlude part. That's it. You also got two tracks with 070 Shake with True Love, which I find it funny that that song's called True Love is not on part three of that, which, eh. And also track Let Me Touch You Once. Yes, yes, you know what the song's about. And in case you miss Chris singing in French, he does that. He does sing in French in this, in this part. And also the next track, Amir Pavir. Yeah, I fucked that up. And of course, part three, which does have slightly more memorable and atmospheric sound, which begins with Shine, which, all right, that's all good. And of course, I guess the Dutch is really good here coming from both Christine and Mike Dean, who's over the main loser here. You know, that's from AJ Cook with the track Leak the Light Out, which once again produced Madonna. And of course, you got the single To Be Honest on here, which is one of the more softer tracks in here, really, of what Chris has done, like way back in his early album days. And yeah, I gotta say this was okay. It was an experience. Like, I'll say yes, the album is long as fuck, but I think if you pass it, let's say the bad parts this well, or at least pace yourself, which I'm definitely fun with this. Like, if the last album made me a fan of his, I guess the album just made me think, you know what, yeah, I'm gonna stay on this train. Like, this is basically how I kind of like how I feel about pop music like this, more very, very avant-garde, very. Now, this is different. I'm not saying because it's different, it's actually good. And it actually, does interesting sounds and not just fucking around. See, kids, that's some see, kids, we used to give a unique sound. This is a good way to do it. In case you, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, next up. Yep, it's soundtrack time again, and I was reading this last month with this, so, in case you know from last month, Across the Spider-Verse is very big. It made a lot of money, got a lot of discourse around many, many, many things. Although I will say, you know what? I can wait, I can wait a lot more now once hearing about the whole Crunchtown shit, which, oh boy. Yeah.
Fucking Phil Lord, man.
Damn it, man. Rooting for you and Chris Miller, but yeah. Across the Spider-Verse, great movie. Glad got a lot of success, and basically saying we're doing a lot better than the Miller movies right now. How's it going, Indiana Jones, or Transformers, or The Flash?
How are you enjoying your money sinkhole now, Warner Brothers?
Yeah. But now, let's go to the soundtrack, which is produced by... Oh, look, there's your Metro. Yep, Metro Boomin. Now, going into this album, even though we ain't talking about the first soundtrack of the movie, I will say for that soundtrack, and I'm going to say for this soundtrack as well, it is very on par with this first soundtrack. Like, other tracks I like here and there. Will I say it's the greatest thing? No. It's decent. It's very mildly decent, is what I'm saying. Like, there's some tracks, like, there are some slight differences. I will say the first one is a bit more of a more motivational, get hyped type of soundtrack. Even though the biggest single of that one was Sunfly with Post Malone, which, yeah, that worked when it comes to the movie, because out of that, I don't care for it as much. This soundtrack here is a bit more moody, more moody, a bit slightly more moody in some parts, mainly, like, I will say the one that is kind of a mood is, the end credits song in my dreaming one with A$AP Rocky and Rosie, that's what they play the end credits, which does fit well. I kinda like that track. They're like, okay, all right, I did that. There are some hype tracks I like. One hype track that I like is, Danger Spider, which is from, oddly enough, Osef, which is oddly enough, and also J.I.D., which, yeah, his verse is going here as well. Like, I would find funny that this is the one, Danger Spider, that was produced by Metro. That was produced by the Honorable C-Note. Although, like, Metro does produce most of the album here, just saying, but the Honorable C-Note produces that track, Danger Spider, and I want to say, Giving Up Not the One. Yeah. He produced the one that had Don't Talk with 2 Chainz and 21 Savage. This tracks I do like. Okay, like I said, this track's like Hummingbird with James Blake, which I could dig that track. The track, Miles Morales with Nas, which, okay. I did that one too. Not My Communication with James Blake and A$AP Rocky. All right. Was it there are some songs that does say, yeah, this feels a bit commercial. Yeah, this feels like something that has a bit of commercial, but on one hand, the commercial is, but more, that I felt something that I, being that, you know, Miles Morales is, black and Latino, like, I can sense he would listen to something like this, like, the track Sugar Cologne with 8 and Offset, which, okay, is a big, very Spanish sense, like, which, yeah, I see that, because they're playing during the whole Captain thing sequence in the movie. Let's see, Link Up, remix with Don Toliver, Wizkid, Beam. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, I can see something like Miles, something like that. And of course, let's say Metro Boomin, you got your usual suspects like Sway Lee, who did both songs with Annihilate and Calling, also played in credits, which that features Nav and a book with a hoodie. You get all the way live with Future and Little Uzi Vert. Okay, later on. That's there. Cola Ray with Self Love, which, all right, that's there too. Like, I didn't mind that track. Like I said, the soundtrack is, again, it's so, like, I have a couple of tracks. Yes, I get the kick cursor here. I know it's a PG movie. And in terms of a soundtrack to a PG movie, it could be worse. It could be the Space Jam 2 soundtrack. And that's the song for the Japanese release. Because I ain't heard it. I know some Lisa, I didn't listen to it, alright? Alright, next up we got, Killer Mike. Return on the Soul shit with Michael. And I'll say this, if you know Killer Mike, you know he did some heavy shit, like some very fumble heavy shit, which, okay, we're just into a lot of, it's offline life, which, okay. And I know when it comes to Killer Mike, there's some questionable shit about Mike during the past couple of years or so, which, Yeah, I mean, I don't know, just about the music, I know. But yeah, like I said, like, is it thoughtful? Yeah. Is it personal? Is it some things? Yeah. Yeah. Like, I can definitely say it's very on point. Under some point, systematic, it's meaningful. To get some features from, you know, CeeLo Green, from a Black Six. I mean, Black Six, Six Slack. Yes. Again. And if you Jackie Ashman, I mean, Jackie Ashman get an appearance, you get an Andre 3000 verse, which, okay, that's good. You get him and Future as well. If you're wondering why is Future on here, look up the Dungeon Family. You know why. If you know, you know. Could you get this one singer who's been the singer that's been, that's in there a lot. In there a lot is vocals by the name of Aaron Allen Kane. Which, okay, she did a good job of what she brought to the vocals, especially if you want to check out Motherless, which, yeah. And of course, you got tracks like Don't the Devil with LP on there. You got some features from Ty Dolla $ign, Currency, Two Chainz. Yeah, it's very decent. It's a very decent album. Like, it'd be like, Killer Mike is still, Killer Mike is still making a dang good solo album. LP do his next, I wouldn't mind an LP solo. Track. Just saying. Next up, I'm gonna do a little curveball at you. So I'm gonna look up an indie rapper. If you're in the know or you've always got for a long time. This is a rapper by the name of Granddad Wooly. It is an album. Actually, he has two versions of an album out. It's called Oital. Which, I'm gonna say who he is at this point. I'm just trying to say who he is. He is an indie rapper based off Atlanta. He actually has touches with people like, mostly Dead in Hip Hop. And, he did kind of, Dead in Hip Hop, he's on that Dead in Gaming podcast with, BZ. And even this collaboration with them before, both them and Fantano as well. Now, you still have a YouTube channel where he sometimes reviews stuff. Although I think that's on hiatus since 2019. Because he's been focusing on doing more stuff on Twitch and gaming and all that shit, which I still started to do. But yeah, like, this album, he has a, Well, he has two versions, Red and Blue, which he's been doing this shit for some time now, and like I said, he got a funny personality, he's on that boom bap hip hop shit, which, all right, which it sounds very good. He did get a lot of couple bars, like he even got one track called Bob Barker, which. It's a press right time, so he's like, oh, okay, this is nice. You got a bunch of people like Conductor Williams, Static Selector, Crisis, and even BC430 doing beats. He doing beats. He's like, all right, that sounds nice. He has a good boss in here. Like, he got some dope songs like Bob Barker, Proud Daughter, refers to Grandeur, Nobody to Your Somebody. And that's on the blue disc, on the red disc, you got tracks like a Broken Record, which features Curly Chris, which, okay, I wish, and Candyman, which I just like that track as well. But yeah, I gotta say, I know some full second about this before, like, I'm kind of liking what he brought here, like, yeah, I'm, you know, but yeah, I'm gonna say Granddad Wooly made a good record. Well, made two versions of great record, it's still a record, man. Bodie James and Chan Hayes, Prisoner Circumstances. It's an EP. I don't know much to say about this. Like, it's very much what you know from Bodie James. Like, he rap about his life, and got some weird ass beats going on with it, which, yeah, I ain't got much to say, but yeah, it's a decent recommendation. But yeah, I could definitely say. I would check it out. We'll look into that. The next one is artist I said something earlier. Amare with an album I call Fountain Baby. And I've had to get a look-see after a short review from Spectrum Pulse. And I can definitely get into this. Like this, it's very another corny ass album. It's pretty much in the Afrobeat, Afrobeat and whirly sounds, which I could go with that. Like got tracks like Disguise, Sex, Violence, and Suicide, which those are my two favorite tracks. I can read with Ecstasy, which okay, versus Sweet, which were pretty good too. So yeah, I can recommend something like this. It goes hard. Stack Selector, the producer Stack Selector got an album out called Round Trip. Okay, and we got a whole bunch of hip hop features. This main over here, but you got people like Being the Butcher, Stove Got Cooks, Ghostface Killer, Raekwon, Method Man, Calling the Machine, Joey Badass, M.O.P., Boney James, the guy Fahim, IDK, Red Veil. All right, it's good people. Good. Logic, okay, he's not bad. Okay, you got people like Russ. Okay, and G.E. Okay, stop.
Oh, there's a name I haven't thought about in forever.
And you wonder why, but still, the album is quite good. Like you do, like you get like some good beats from Stack Selector, which he buys good some good ass beats and the rappers that brought them, they did it and did it. Yeah, they brought the A game too. Also got like a first track, Round Trip for Dave, but that's from possible from De La Soul. In case I forgot to mention that, but yeah. This is interesting to listen to. Like, there's a lot of good and bad in there. Even though I mentioned Russ and G-Eazy, but yeah. Alright. Next up. Oh, look, it's Alchemist O'Clock, or Alchemist 15. I don't know. Look, it's this EP Flying High, which, you know, Joe by now, like, yeah, like, yes, there are 8 songs, well, actually 4 songs and instrumentals. R.P. Tracy with Orchestra and Billy Woods. All right, very good shit. 12 Man TF with TF and Boney James. All right. I got to get that track too. Blessed with Mike and Slideshow. All right. I did that well. I like Midnight All. I like Wolf. That's with Larry June and Jay Worthy, which we put it down too, but yeah, they be some good shit. Another track that, another album that, sometimes the Currency and Harry Fraud with their little, I want to say EP, yeah, EP, fuck, it's EP, it's like 22 minutes, it's EP, with, Vices, which they got this very 80s, I mean, Vice sound going for it. They got some grit, which, okay, that kind of works because I like a lot of Harry Fraud production on here and in general. But you get tracks like Black Point Boat Lunch, Singing with Being the Butcher, Marcus Camby with Jim Jones, which Jim Jones did a good verse here. But yeah, I can say Jim Jones, but nigga, do not act like you better push a T, nigga. Just don't. I like you and all, but you're not him. Mama Collins for Larry June is very good. Last track I love, Pope Picasso with Vico, which that one's very impressive. I like that one as well. As well as A6 Tessarosa with Wrong Street, which, alright, that should bang too. Even though the only Currency albums I listen to is mostly if I was doing like, him and Harry Fraud are not too bad either. Like, Harry Fraud with Dutchin, like I said, it definitely hits. And I can definitely say that this ought to be one of my favorites of the year so far. But wait. So you figure that's it, right? Okay, fine. I got one more. This was a low light, and look, then again, I ain't done a low light in a while. which that should be good because that means I wore bad albums. But this was I was curious of because I don't know. I listened to this guy before. So yeah, Little Uzi Vert, the Pink Tape.
God help us all.
I listened to shit one time and went back. This album was an album 27 minutes long. That's what I got from title. Album 27 minutes. Now don't get thinking, Mark, you listened to Christine the Queens for 10 minutes longer than that. Yeah, I know, but this difference, that one's actually good. It actually has some things going for it. Okay, fine, this one kinda does too, but I wouldn't say it's just so questionable. I will say in the first song, Flood the Face, which he was saying, Is it Uzi gay? Which basically saying, I fuck your bitch, I fuck eight bitches up. Yeah, like, okay, because, you know, he wearing pink and all this shit, even doing, they. I'm not trying to mission him, that's my apology, I'm not gonna do that. You know, I like Nicki Minaj. Because apparently on Endless Fashion, she misgendered them, apparently. And
Did she? I didn't notice on the check. I just noticed the really shitty interpolation of Blue Dabba D. And yeah. Probably the single worst Nicki Minaj lyric I've heard since the stupid duct tape line.
Yeah.
I got a Republican doctor. He made my ass great again, MAGA.
And suddenly David Guetta felt like, whew, that's a lot of my sight. We're not done yet with you. Okay, anyway. Like, some of the tracks, I just feel like you're very average little Uzi album or any other trap rap album. With some sprinkle of some things that you'll see or you'll notice. Check Nakamura, which, yes, that's a track that that samples the Rising Sun, which is the theme for wrestler Shinsuke Nakamura.
Uh-huh.
I looked that shit. And of course, we all know about the cover of Chop Suey from System of a Down.
Cover in quotation marks, cover, because or cover. It's only like half the song.
The thing is, it technically plays the whole song. But Lil Uzi only raps over, 2 minutes of it? And even then, so much of the vocal flows are changed, especially in the chorus, that it just sounds, really fucking awkward. It's like, why does it just let the last minute of the song play? Not even with, the original vocals or Uzi doing vocals. It just sits there. Why?
Yeah, okay, you didn't do much of there. And apparently, the only interpolation, according to a song called "Mama, I'm Sorry," which consisted of songs like "Hate Being Sold" by Chief Keef, 50 Cent, Wiz Khalifa, and apparently somebody I used to know from Gautier and Kimberly. Like, what the fuck? Okay.
Yeah.
And this one just really got me. Like the song Fire Alarm, which they fucking sampled Justice. That's fucking Justice.
Yep.
At first I'm thinking, okay, that's okay. It sounds different because I said it again. And realized, can I say that song instead? Yeah, that sounds cooler and better than this. There's not really much, and yes, the features he got with Bring Me the Horizon, which I don't give a shit about them. And of course, the weird thing, he's got something with Baby Metal, which, okay. I mean, guess they like Baby Metal.
Yeah. Let me just say this really quick about those two songs. So, the Bring Me the Horizon song sadly might be the best thing they've done since, ironically enough, that Baby Metal collaboration song Kingslayer. And even then, honestly, this sounds like that song, Werewolf, I think it's called. It sounds like a B-side from Deftones' White Pony album. And the fact that I think the Baby Metal track might be my favorite on this, and it's literally like the ending track of the album. It's literally titled The End and sounds like B-sides from Metal Galaxy with like frantic metalcore riffs, D-beat grooves, and bombastic electronic and J-pop. And the thing is, it would be the most, like, the absolute best if it wasn't for the fucking random-ass Lil Uzi ad-libs. Just like, what are you... It's like they're just like, hey, I'm here too, guys. I'm here too, even though I know it's like my own album. But it's, oh, fucking God.
I'm gonna be cool just because I got not much to say. The album is kind of forgettable. I know I've talked about in the past with Turbo Take and Rubber's Rage 2. Even on those projects, I just don't give a shit about. This one, this is not an example of what they're talking about with Avenged Sevenfold. I get because it's different. It's not really all that different. You have a little bit of difference here and there, but it doesn't make. But that's like saying the difference is what 20% of the 8% of usual shit. I mean, the end of the Baby Metal. Okay, that's fine. And maybe Fire Alarm, but then again, that's because of Justice. And I still say I was that song from Justice than you. But yeah, this album is like I said, this is a one-time listen. Like usually I would do like maybe two, three listens of an album or maybe more. This one's I got through once, and I'm like, yeah. No, I can do without you, Uzi.
Its job on Billboard. That's all we care about.
Yeah, you managed to beat Morgan Wallen, which is good. And hey, you managed to beat the first rap album, be number one since Metro Boomin's Heroes and Villains, which was released in December. Yeah. I get hip hop. Well, mainstream hip hop hasn't been on that great. Underground is like, oh yeah, I'm a fun underground. You forgot. You have a fun right here. You know, there's a Scaring the Host DLC EP, right? You should check that out.
Yeah, you should.
I still need to listen to that.
And I'm done. You want it.
I'll leave one last note on this album. For me, it's kind of bad in the same way that the A7X album is bad, in that both albums just consist of throwing a bunch of random shit at the wall at once with very little coherency or any of it sticking. That being said, if I had to choose the lesser of two evils here, it would be the Pink Tape, because at the very least, it sounds like Uzi wanted to make that album. Whereas Avenged Sevenfold just sounded like, I don't fucking care anymore. Just get this shit done so we can go home. Like, if you're gonna suck, at least be audacious about it. Anyway, now that leaves it to me to wrap things up out here. So, we already took care of my lowlights, obviously. So, I'm gonna go just through top picks and, you know, quick round stuff. So, starting right here at the top, it's been about 6 years since the last time we heard from Godflesh, their album Post Self in 2017, which was within the time frame of the first year and a half or so of this podcast. Now they're back with their new album Purge, an album described by the group as sort of hearkening back to the spirit of their 1992 sophomore album Pure, which, much like their debut Street Cleaner, formed like the essential groundwork for industrial metal as a genre. And true to form, the album sound definitely has the feel of like a really great collection of Pure era B-sides. The album opener Nero has a really great steady groove, this slight shuffle to the tempo with like that repetitious drum machine beat, and equally repeating like guitars looping these brittle mechanical chords. It's a vibe maintained throughout on several other songs like Army of None, all complete with Justin K. Broderick's vocals delivery, you know, his vocal delivery varying from melodic post-metal ambience to the more, like, gravelly belts and shouts. Hell, the album even kind of has, like, some drum and bass-style percussion rhythms to make things mix things up on tracks like Landlord and Permission, which take the industrial guitars and general soundscapes and gives them a vibe more akin to, honestly, kind of like a PS1-era video game soundtrack. Seriously, I found this YouTube channel that just, like, this guy named Sean Shonson who deep dives into, like, the more obscure facets of the PS1 game library. There was a lot of fucking drum and bass in that era of game soundtracks. Holy shit. But that's a tangent. So, yeah, if you're looking for just, like, a really great extension of Godflesh's most seminal album, there you go. Next up, in one corner, we have longtime Japanese drone, sludge, punk, noise, whatever you want to call them, rock band Boris, at it since the fucking 90s and still going strong today. In the other corner, we have Uniform, an industrial noise band from New York City that's been at it for about a decade at this point, with not nearly as many albums as Boris, but they have 4 albums under their belt and they're all pretty damn great. And now we have their new collaborative effort, Bright New Disease. Put them together and the resulting album slaps in pretty much the ways you would expect from both bands. You have tracks like No, which bring this very aggressive punk energy to stuff like the drums and the brittle overdriven guitar tones that come more from like the Uniform style of songwriting. With that band's vocalist, Michael Burden, delivering a lot of very gravelly shouts that play off well against the collective vocal wailing of Boris. Similarly, with tracks like Endless Death Agony, where Uniform's energy takes the lead on things and the rhythms and all. While on the other end of the spectrum, tracks like Narcotic Shadow are buried in a lot of these industrial synths that eke out these very eerie melodies and ambiance amidst thumping drums before a very post-metal back half. And a track like The Sinners from Hell, parentheses, Jigoku, no relation to that one manga anime thing, you know the one, is drenched in a lot of the dronier aspects of Boris' style, with eerie droning drums, guitars, and a lot of unnerving synthetic soundscapes droning off eternally into the sonic void. So yeah, it's kind of back and forth between like sludgier ambiance, industrial, all that business. If you like your music abrasive like that, then good stuff, I recommend it. Alright, for the next album here, we're diving into Blossom, which is the second full-length album from up-and-coming metalcore act Pupil Slicer, which I could say pretty comfortably goes damn hard. The best comparison point I could think of would be to a lot of like the heavier aspects of Rollo Tomasi's style, with maybe more of a dissonant mathcore edge. Like, in the drums, you got a lot of these aggressive kick runs, blast beats, lots of real kind of mathy rhythmic progressions and weird sticking patterns, guitars that have a lot of really gnarly metalcore riffage with a lot of atonal chords and high-end tremolos and all that good business, utterly gnarly vocals, and rhythms that have like back and forth between the faster parts and a lot of slow menacing grooves. A lot of this aggro energy is offset by occasional pockets of post-metal-esque melodies that work really well, especially with a lot of the production on like some of the cleaner vocals. Overall, a lot of this kind of sits into that same kind of very like mathy metalcore with post-melody elements like I said, Rollo Tomasi, bands like Ithaca, even comparable to some of the more dissonant aspects of a band like Frontier. So if that kind of thing appeals to you, then do I have the album for you? And moving on to the next pick here, yes, new material from King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. Because if a year goes by without a new King Gizzard album, then didn't that year really happen? Anyway, with Petrodragonic Apocalypse, no, I'm not saying the full thing anymore, we see them returning to the, metal influences that they just decided to randomly bust out one day on Infest the Rat's Nest, which is still my favorite King Gizzard album. And once again, they pull it off pretty damn well with a lot of really banging, trippy, psychedelic metal jams. Trippy is the key word here. Like, you definitely still have a lot of, like, the buzzy-ass desert riffs and aggressive tempos that bring to mind, like, some of the sludgier aspects of bands like Sleep and even early Mastodon. The prog year aspects definitely get cranked up quite a bit higher year. Examples of some of the heavier tracks include stuff like the single Gila Monster, which brings a lot of bluesy triplet metal groovage with vocals that kind of sound like they're coming from, like, the narration of, like, a really good Western. Kind of, like, very, like, high on fire type of vibes. The proggier aspects mainly come in the form of the album's emphasis on a lot of unusual time signatures, like, pretty much from the word go with the album opener Motor Spirit, which has a lot of off-kilter polyrhythms and guitar riffing that honestly kind of sounds like peak period Tool in a way. This is best exemplified at, like, once you get to about the 3-ish minute mark, you kind of get this extended bridge where you have, like, this very, like, Tool-esque auxiliary drum percussion segment mixing in with, like, this repetitious guitar and bass combo with an unusual time signature. And this even kind of, like, blends into some of, like, the thrashier songs on here, like the single Dragon, taking that and giving it a more distinct edge with the weird time signatures and how they play off in the riffs, the guitar harmonies. And there's this really great, like, Mastodon as hell middle segment of the song that even has a lot of really, definitely some Brand Daler-esque drums and rhythms in there. It's very deserty, trippy, aggressive, it fucking slaps, and honestly, if King Gizzard just decided to drop all the other psychedelic BS and just do nothing but metal albums from now on, or at the very least had, like, a permanent metal side project, I would be here for it. And now for the last of my top picks here, an album with quite a bit of melancholy surrounding its existence, that being the new Foo Fighters album, But Here We Are. Now, we've been bringing this up a lot in the past couple of years, but it's kind of been a really wild roller coaster of emotions and affairs from the camp of Foo Fighters. Obviously, the sudden passing of Taylor Hawkins last year being the most unexpected and devastating, but that combined with the sort of strange state of their albums where it didn't really feel like anything was quite that great, save for when they did a one-off metal soundtrack for a horror comedy thing, which I believe I said was, like, the best thing any of them had recorded in a while. Yeah, it's just kind of been, like, all over the place, especially since everybody's been kind of waiting to see what the band even still does from that point onward. Of course, now we have, like, our answer here, as we have the new studio album from the Foo Fighters with But Here We Are, where, just to note, Dave Grohl himself, in addition to his usual guitar and vocal duties, jumped on the drum kit to record this album, but the band, of course, did eventually get a permanent new drummer in the form of very, very prolific drummer Josh Fries, if I could talk. I'm not gonna repeat it, just go down his Wikipedia. There's, like, fucking everything there. It's like 6 degrees of Josh Fries up in here. Now, according to the words of the band, and Dave Grohl in particular, this new album was mainly meant to, like, channel the essence of their 90s-era output, in particular their 1995 debut album, but coming at it from a more mature perspective, and sure enough, it definitely sounds like a very wizened take on the kind of energy and vibe that they had on their 90s alt-rock output, which, just to kind of put everything out here, easily makes it the best mainline Foo Fighters album since Wasting Light. The thing with their output between then and now is just, like, it felt like they were just kind of treading water. There wasn't really, like, that oomph, that spark here. But here on this project, the band sounds way more lively than they have in a long-ass time. And, yeah, sure, the songwriting is your typical very, like, big-sounding, hook-laden alt-rock record. Again, 90s Foo Fighters, but there's just so much more passion here, from the really great melodies, the big sounding choruses and hooks, and just, like, the all around general vibes. It really, like, gets your attention and makes you, like, want to listen to it from the moment you hit play on, like, the album opener Rescued. Sets the tone well with kind of, like, this sense of triumph that definitely feels like it fits this mood of trying to move past, you know, loss, of overcoming personal hardship and adversity and trying to hit the light at the end of the tunnel and getting to the other side. Same thing on songs like the title track, or hell, even some of the more emotional cuts like Show Me How and even the album closer Rest, which, yeah, this whole album is, again, the best Foo Fighters album we've heard in a while, some of their strongest songwriting, and a very fitting tribute to the passing of one of the great rock drummers of the past couple decades. Rest in peace, Taylor Hawkins, and let's see where Foo Fighters as a whole go from here. And then that just kind of leaves the quick round stuff to get through. So, okay, so the Slipknot Adderall EP. I already said my piece when we did the episode where this EP came out. But I have to reiterate that I still don't entirely get the point of building an entire EP around this one song. Like, it wasn't a bad song or even a bad album opener. I don't really get the point of fixating on this one. Like, there had to be any number of better tracks from the end so far that you had to pull from. Janelle Monae's The Age of Pleasure. Yeah, no shock. New Janelle Monae. It slaps like all their other albums slap. And yeah, it's one of the thirstiest, horniest albums I've heard in a while. But given that I'm a bisexual, cisgender white guy instead of a non-binary sapphic person of color, I'm not sure my opinion counts for much here. Still good music, though. Killer Mike with Michael. I'm still not entirely sure how I feel about this. Like, okay, I did like the singles we had going into this, and the final album does have a pretty solid mix of, like, rap bangers and some good soulful introspective jams, but how do I put this? Like, I guess my issue is kind of like a kayfabe sort of thing. Just to kind of explain what that is, on the off chance you don't know what that is, I can't assume everyone listening to this is into wrestling, but kayfabe kind of refers to oversimplify, like, the boundaries between, like, the fictional reality of a wrestling company, like their characters and storylines, and the IRL reality of the business and all. What I mean is, the point of the album and the reason why it's called Michael is that he's kind of trying to peel back the artifice here. Like, there's definitely more songs in which he attempts to speak to us as Michael Render instead of Killer Mike. And to be fair, that does lead to some really incredible tracks like Motherless, which is this very, like, you know, bearing his soul homage to his mother and grandmother, two very important women in his life, stuff like that. But it does clash pretty damn hard when he goes into Killer Mike mode, precisely because of, like what Mark was kind of hinting at, like, what we know about Mike as an actual person over the past few years, and it's like, again, it wouldn't bother me as much if it wasn't, like, this deliberate attempt for the person to speak to us as opposed to the persona. I don't know, this made more sense to me when I was writing in my notes. Just, like, it's a good listen, you just have to be able to try and put that out of your head. By the way, speaking of wrestling metaphors, we should also mention that one of the best releases of this past month was Super Eyepatch Wolf's video essay on Roman Reigns. Suffering Succotash, really?
Yeah, it was rough for quite a while.
Yeah, I gotta ask, because I watched that in retrospect. What was it like watching that live in the moment as it happened?
It was various levels of cringe. It was very hard for us to get through it, but we did, eventually.
Well, at least now he gets to be the head of the table or something.
And God bless him for it.
Anyway, and for the last of my quick round stuff, new Queens of the Stone Age album in Times New Roman. Okay, so it eschews the dancier grooves and ideas from the Mark Ronson-produced Villains album, and sort of tries to veer back more into the blues rock-flavored alt-rock that characterizes a lot of their more quintessential output. In particular, I heard a lot of invocations of the Lullabies to Paralyze album, But I even heard some tinges of, like, Era Vulgaris in here, which, you know, in theory should appeal to me, because that was kind of, like, the first Queens of the Stone Age album I heard when it was new. Fun fact, I bought a copy at a record store, lost it, then bought myself a second copy, and then discovered my first copy many years later, hiding under a dresser. I am not the most organized person. Anyway, but that being said, I don't know, the songs here, I don't know what it is. It just doesn't feel like it has that fizz that really catches my attention with really good Queens material. Like, God, I'm getting kind of nervous. Like, was the last great Queens of the Stone Age album really a decade ago with Like Clockwork? Ugh, God, that's... Fuck me, I was still in the early years of college at that point. Shit. But, yeah, that's pretty much it for the quick round, and I already got in my roasts on A7X and fucking Lil Uzi Vert, which, yeah, just an ungodly amount of bad new metal business. So, I don't have anything else to add. That'll pretty much about do it for this episode. Again, as always, if any of our positives pique your interest, there'll be a playlist down in the description so you can check out those albums and catch up on anything you might have missed. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at SuroRezzo, like us on Facebook, visit the website SuroResolution.com for written articles, this podcast, podcast, O&A, all of that business. And of course, be sure to jump into our Discord, as that's pretty much going to be the best place to be immediately notified whenever anything new goes up on the website, because, oh boy, is things are going south even harder than I ever imagined. Ah, thank God for browser plugins. So, yeah, that'll about do it for this roundup. Hopefully we'll get back into the swing of more usual weekly business next week. Then, of course, the roundup for July. So, until next time, can anybody hack the giant Las Vegas sphere and replace it with the photorealistic Afro God from Goodnight Pun Pun? I'm asking for a friend. It's me, I'm the friend.